on-screen award-winning presenter and poet, philosopher, some might even say, Wheeze Back. Jordan, that's what Andy did to start the last time, but then she's obviously not here today. So Jenks is back is how we're going to start this episode of One Soccer Today, presented by TonyBet. Jordan Wilson in the house, and I know we shouted him out last time, but because we have two Jordans in the studio right now.
The real Jordan.
There is a high degree of Jordans around me right now, no complaints. He got married as well. I'm not going to say one inspired the other.
He's my twin.
But both of our Jordans are married, so congratulations to our buddy Jordan behind
Love you, twin.
Making us look almost presentable on this show, and I'll get this out right away. We are taping this just before Halifax and Ottawa play tonight. So we're gonna
huge
do a full
game.
Deep dive on the CPL, except for arguably the most important game of the weekend, just because the calendars don't match up. But OST is back. Petrillo will be back, we think. I think, who knows? I'll keep my phone on standby just in case. But they'll break do the full breakdown there. We also have Canadian Women's National Team to talk about today. We are what, four days. Not good at math.
Four
days away from the first. And then, of course, the return leg coming up next, whatever the 29th is. That's how my... It's not even the 29th.
Week and a half. 26.
Yeah. Thank you. This is why.
It's okay, buddy.
We're going to do that.
Yeah.
And we're also going to talk some Major League Soccer because the three Canadian clubs are newsworthy this week. But we are in that time of year, Jordan, with the Canadian Premier League. We are going through lots of matches where there are teams pulling away. I think you're trying to fact check me on some of these tiers.
No.
But let's start with the side that I claimed, what was it, 5 weeks ago? Running away with the title. I was adamant that they were going to do it. They haven't officially clinched it yet, but Cavalry are looking phenomenal. Let's sort of walk everyone through, Jordo, the week, because the whole debate was Cavalry is going to go on this really long road trip, and 4 points would be good. 5 points would be great. They crushed that road trip, came back home. They had Vancouver in town. This is my camera that I need to look at. I'm going to figure out this podcasting on video.
You got it,
eventually.
Buddy.
But they come home, they beat Vancouver, and they're now comfortably ahead of Pacific for the regular season title. Now, I know you were a little bit reluctant when we last talked about the tiers, the rankings, who was going to win. You were still saying, don't count out Forge. That was my Jordan Wilson impression.
I like it.
Are you ready?
I hope I don't sound like that.
I promise you, you don't. Are you ready to give Tommy Wheeldon Jr. that lovely bit of silverware that he has been chasing for half a decade? Is it time?
I think it's time. I think there's only one, we'll say, prophet that is wise enough in Gareth Wheeler that called it over before everyone else kind of caught on and said it was over before the biggest game of the season when Calvary played Forge at Tim Hortons Field. But I guess he felt it in his spirit. But now I can say confidently that Calvary will be finishing first, and it is over. Now, who is finishing second is the big million-dollar question, because this is where we want to get into tiers. Pacific FC showed yesterday against York United their ceiling, how they could play. And if they play like that, that's a team that I could get behind. I could basically say that they could go far. But we've also seen a Pacific that's been stale throughout the season as well. But who's that number two team is probably the better question, because I think we can all agree with three games left, one win from Calvary, they basically seal it. I think it's over. I think it's done and dusted. But who is number two in your opinion?
Well, I'm not going to change from what I was 5 weeks ago because I'm crushing this so far.
Okay, let's hear it.
Pacific is number two. They're still the second best team. If they didn't have that goal scoring drought, and it was a drought, it was like no rain for 3 years level of dry.
It was dry.
It was incredibly dry, sandpaper almost.
Wow.
But they've broken that. And I think you use a really good word there. They showed what they can be at their best. Remember the last time they played at York Lions Stadium? It was an awful 0-0.
Fell asleep.
It was literally, I think it might have been the worst game of the season. We're on 99 tonight. I think to me that is the worst game of the season, and it's not particularly close. Obviously, things are going on with York United. They were missing Mo Babuli. I think we showed him 27 times on the sideline looking very sad, but self-inflicted wounds. You're not getting any empathy from me. But that is where they are right now. And you can see the pressure mounting. And I think it's a really difficult line for Martin Nash to try and toe right now, that whole nobody wants us in the playoffs. And I think that works for a couple of weeks. And then if you repeat it too much, you're like, wait, nobody does want them. Why do we care? And I'm not suggesting that they've mailed it in or they are going to mail it in, but they're done. For me, there's no way back for York United for me.
Ooh, that is so funny, because when you say that, that was on their faces yesterday when they played Pacific, which is crazy to me because you're 1 point out Atletico, Ottawa, and Halifax play tonight. So one team's either getting 3 points, yeah. They're both getting one. You're not out of the woods yet. You could still claw your way back by getting a win, buying that win that you need. So I don't think it's over. But for you, I think you're more talking about the way that they had their head down after 20 minutes. And maybe you're just thinking that they can't pull it off in three games. But there's still three games to be played. Mm. I know I sound biased because I'm the former York United player.
You do incredibly, yes.
That is fine. However, there's still football to be played. And I have to shout out Pops. My dad would always say the ball is round, it rolls whatever way it wants to. But you could force it. You can make the ball roll your way if you just roll up your sleeves and dig deep. Who do York play the last three games?
I'll have to check that.
They play. No, they play Calvary on the weekend.
You're asking a rhetorical question.
No.
Make me look silly.
No. I was just doing it. I was trying to go through the math in my head. All the teams. They play Calvary this weekend. Okay, maybe you don't win that one. Maybe you get a draw. Then you have everything to play for with Atletico Ottawa at home.
Yep.
Which usually ends in a tie, but it's a game where it's a team you're competing with. If you buy 3 points, then you have everything to play for. And then you're playing Vancouver away, last game of the season, where there's points to be had as well. Sure. So I don't think it's over for York United. I think I have to ask you, though, Jenkins,
sure,
about a turning point, because we saw Pacific yesterday. We mentioned how great they were. But then we're also talking about Forge, who a game like that, usually against Valor at IG Field, they definitely tie or they lose. They don't come away with the 3 points. They win 3-2. Are they still a tier two team? And for those who are new, tier two means they're finishing fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
You still think this Forge team, that is 1 point away from second, is a tier two team?
Yes.
And why?
So I'm going to do this carefully because I think they deserve a ton of credit for yesterday.
Okay.
It would have been very easy, especially after they went down again in the second half. It would have been really easy for them to go, oh, it's Winnipeg. We hate this turf. We hate coming here. Whatever. Find your excuse. It's not happening today. They dug deep. They found that gear to come back and win it. And what is not surprising, because Bobby Smyrniotis is one of, if not the best coach in this league, is how they were able to completely change the way they were playing in the second half. Because they were second best to everything in the first half. Valor was exceptional. Valor's playing fun right now. It's too little too late, and it's almost, you wonder the psychology of some of those guys.
You're playing for a contract or your place next season.
Bingo. And Phil has his adjusted system. It's working really good. DeBrienne's looking really good up top. Dante Campbell's one of the best fullbacks in the league. All of these things. But for Forge to go in and find that creativity, Bobby makes the sub. I think Khajapur came in to start the second half. Borges came into the game, and I can't remember who he came in with, but they passes, excuse me, thank you very much for that, in the control room. It changed the game completely. And that, I think, for Tristan Borges too, he's been dropped from the team. He, from what I can tell, he hasn't been hurt. He's just been out of favor.
Yeah.
Fitness, form, whatever. So for him to sort of get that message from the coach, you might be one of our OG guys. You might be a former Golden Boot winner, but it's not cutting it right now.
He came out hungry yesterday, but keep going.
And his ball to set up the initial goal, playing it through to the byline, the cutback, easy goal for Pacific.
Yes.
Like, that was Forge that we've been waiting to see. And we saw that playoffs last year. We haven't seen it pretty much all season long. We didn't see it at the end of the regular season last year. For me, it's just a consistency thing with them. And because there's not that pressure on them right now, I think they're going to try and turn up the wick a little bit to get that seeding for the playoffs. But I just wonder, they still haven't sold me. And a team that is that good on paper, all of these things, for them to consistently underperform and not get the clinical finishing, the execution, I think that's their struggle. Because until they found a little bit of confidence, it was still Benny Batty Bonga doing everything by himself. Individuals and attack trying to sort it. Taron Campbell has to get the ball midway or in the center circle. He's not able to score goals like that. So if you get second half Forge for the rest of the season, yeah, they might finish second. I just don't think it's going to be them.
I like it because there's no question that they've underperformed Forge, but this is also the time that they heat up. So it could be that case. This next match, we say the biggest match of the season. I've said it. I probably called at least a dozen biggest match of the season, but they were at the time. But this Forge Pacific match that's about to happen at Tim Hortons Field, that is the biggest match of the season. If they can go out and show out, that is a big push and will have me back in them. I could never put them in fourth or fifth. I could see them finishing second, but they have to take care of business this week. You want to flip quickly to the good news in Halifax?
I do, but I want to make sure that we don't just glaze over Cavalry and what they've done. I want to make sure we give them some of their flowers because they have been that good.
They have.
Carducci makes another brilliant save. Remember, he's a two-time goalkeeper of the year. They get the business done away from home, and now they get to just enjoy themselves at home for the most part to wrap up this season. I think they could clinch next week, depending on how results, but they have that really short amount of runway.
Regardless of the math, if they win, they get 3 points, it's clinched. Like, they've done it. Mm-hmm. Because I think also, too, you're Mr. CP, but then it would go goals, right? No, sorry.
Wins is first.
Wins. And then, yeah, so they're clearly ahead. I don't see a team winning three straight outside of them.
So right now they're on 13 wins. They have three games left, as do Pacific and Forge. So Forge would need to, if they leveled them on points somehow, if they made that math work, they would need to win at least three games, which is all of them, to have that tiebreaker. That's really difficult. So for me, it's a two-horse race down to Pacific. I think Cavalry, they obviously had their slow start to the year. We're trying to adjust to that new identity that they wanted to play.
Yes.
And they really haven't looked back. The record is 13-7-5. And I think those five losses were earlier in the season, like the first.
Yeah, when they were sixth, they didn't get it going.
Yeah. So for me, the runaway, they're 40 goals. Same with Pacific now. They still have the best goal difference in the league. All of the tiebreakers work for them. Their form works for them right now, and their depth.
Yeah, it's theirs.
Really, really impressive. And I want to, yes, Gareth Wheeler did make that show. I will remind everyone.
He's not the only one that backed Calvary, by the way. He's just the one that called it prematurely. Or he had a feeling in his spirit and his whatever, his heart, his gut, that they were going to win and it was over. So he called it early, whatever. I apologize to him already. I said you maybe did too much, buddy. But he called it early. They're going through. But we all back Calvary. I backed them from 10 games ago. I said this team could do it.
The only reason I bring it up is because I have the picture in my favorites on my phone ready to go.
Whoa.
I texted Tommy and Meyer Bevan both. Meyer's winning the Golden Boot. Cavalry's winning the season before the season started. It's time stamped. It's ready to go for when it happens. And Bevan's only one goal back at the Golden Boot, so I might be on for a twofer.
Yeah, not on for a twofer at all. There's no twofer. There's a name called Ollie Bassett. Okay, let's switch to it. Let's get to two more teams. Let's get to Halifax. Mm-hmm. Let's get to Atletico Ottawa, biggest match of the season. Who do you got
tonight? Oh, I worry about the field. I really do. Ex-Hurricane Lee now. Again, like I feel for Nova Scotia. I feel for the Maritimes and Atlantic Canada, who have been pelted by, I think, four like massive storms. They're going to get more rain on Tuesday. Like, what a year for all of these guys to move to Halifax and experience it for the first time with the weather. Also, shout out the grounds crew who have to like put everything away in the sea cans and the storage before the storm, fix the field, get everything back out for the game that was delayed by a couple of days. I think because Halifax are in a bit of a rut right now, there's going to be pressure. And that pressure takes them one of two ways. They embrace it, they go through, and they get an early goal on Ottawa and they don't look back. Or Ottawa gets their goal first, whether that's in minute one or minute 70, and it's going to be a draw. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm not going to go back to the previous conversation, but I want to say Ottawa's my third best team in the league. That's still my ranking.
Okay.
That hasn't changed. Cavalry, Pacific, Ottawa, Forge, and Halifax. I think they get in, and that's very exciting for them, but look, it's just prognosticating and predictions right now.
So how big of a step is this for Halifax Wanderers, that city, their fan base, the $40 million proposal?
Yeah.
To get that, which I never knew playing, that they every year they bring in the bleachers and the stands and then they take it all down. But that environment, I always said it was the closest thing to Europe. It felt like the fans are close. You're taking a throw in. You can literally smell what's on their breath. Like they're that close to you. That when they're talking about your girlfriend or your face, you can hear it. It's very clear. And I appreciate that environment. And I think that it's a great fan base. But I just wanted to hear from you, Jenko, about the $40 million proposal and the fact that I think it's 2025 that it should be all said and done. But how great is that for the league and for Halifax?
It's huge for the league. And the credit has to go to Derek Martin and his team, who have been able to make that temporary stadium work, Jordan, for so long and make it that
cozy
atmosphere, considering it's not permanent. And there's porta potties and not like running water because they've just had to make it work. So that when Derek made his presentation this past weekend, and we'll throw some photos up from his decks of what they're proposing. I think 8,500. I'll pull it up to make sure I want to get all this information right, because Derek put some time into this, so I can do the same, making sure I got my information.
Let's do it.
It'll be up to 8,500, the capacity. That's up from 2,000 right now. Permanent grandstands, groundwork in, water, plumbing, electrical, lighting, all of that to make it feel like a permanent home again. The one thing I think that disappointed is the wrong word for it, but because of this being a community space where you can have concerts and local clubs and everything coming in to use it, they would be abandoning the grass in this proposal to go to artificial turf. That would, of course, be FIFA size. It'd be multi-sport. That seems like in a perfect world where they have all the money and land's not an issue, they're keeping the grass because it's been one of their advantages. But I think to sell this to the community, to people who may not be football supporters, though it feels like everyone in Halifax is at this point, that it is usable for everybody, so we have to go with the artificial turf. They're going to make that permanent grandstand and basically loop it around with the with like canopies, roofs over top of it. So on rainy days, which we've learned this year will happen in Halifax, they get a little bit of protection, and they're just going to make that space even better. And there's a really good proposal, by the way. You can see the entire thing on their website, halifaxwanderers.kmpl.ca/wanderersgrounds. It's got all of it. But just to tie it off, same location, improve it. They would be hoping to lay the groundwork, if it was approved, at the end of next season, by hoping to have it opened by 2025 to start. So brilliant news all around.
Beautiful.
And I mean, you're a player. Like, how much of a difference is that to give them a home?
No, it means the world. I mean, I definitely understand the whole getting artificial turf as opposed to grass. Just because we play in Canada as well. It was a luxury playing Halifax. You're used to playing with certain boots on turf. Yeah. Then you get to play with six studs if it's raining or it's a bit wet, or just even normal studs, and you're playing on grass. You got a bit of cushion when you drop. You watch me play. I spend most of the match on the floor.
You still do in the studio.
Exactly. So doing the worm and all sorts. But I totally understand. I just think it's beautiful having a place where you can call your own that is specifically for footy. So for Halifax, that is big news, because that fan base is the best in the league. So to have a home to continue to grow that is phenomenal. You want to switch to MLS real quick?
I do. Yep. So congratulations again to Derek and the Halifax Wanderers club and the supporters. Now we got to make sure we understand it's not done and dusted. They still have to get approvals and things have to get
for
started.
Sure.
But to see that momentum turning is great news for Halifax.
Absolutely.
Okay. Staying in Canadian football especially, we're going to go to Major League Soccer and talk about the big game at the weekend. TFC, Vancouver Whitecaps, the defending Canadian champions coming in. Everything's coming up roses. TFC supporters on Twitter being frustrated that Vancouver's getting all the Canadian internationals and doing the thing that TFC wanted to do in the lead up to 2026 with Larea now and Adekubi. And you got Junior Hoilett as well. Just the vibes have not gone down for Vancouver since they won the Canadian championship.
They've recruited well, man. They've recruited well.
They've done brilliant. And I think in this area where we all live, where we all work, there is a tendency to be sucked into TFC as the club in Canadian football. But that's not the case anymore. I don't think it has been for a minute. I think it's been the Whitecaps, and they're showing it both on and off the field. And they had some work to do off the field. They still have work to do off the field. But everything's trending the right way, and they're getting the bragging rights in the football match, which is ultimately what the supporters care about the most, is wins and losses. TFC score first. Vancouver comes back. What did you make of the game and the performance?
I thought it was a decent start for TFC, but I just thought Vancouver Whitecaps and their quality and the clientele that they have just took over the game. You're looking at Brian White, 11 goals of the season. Ryan Gold, 10. Dangerous left foot. Even the way that they scored the goals, the second goal, the cross into Brian White, big header, just not even power, just placement. To 2-1. And then for me, even in the 73rd minute, like, you know, I'm a footy nerd. The 1-2 that is played from White, he plays it off to Gold. Gold clips it over, I think Ross did for Toronto FC, in Brian White's path. He takes a touch, almost makes it 3-1. That chemistry and that connection is dangerous. So you're looking at a Vancouver Whitecaps team that just were back-to-back CAN champs, are fourth now in the Western Conference. They can go off and actually go on a playoff run. I truly believe it. You got to get a bit lucky. I also will say that with playoffs, like who you get first and all that stuff. But I really feel like they can make a push. And then you're looking at this team where you have Ali Ahmed and Larea. You saw the chemistry a bit in the Gold Cup. And that was just them playing off the rip early. Maybe 5-4 days of preseason training. And then playing Gold Cup matches. Now they're going to be teammates. Also, Hoilett, Adekubi, if Hoilett can re-sign or do another deal and he's there permanently for next season, what that looks like as well. So they're picking some big names in. If they can get a striker, maybe one or two more pieces, this Vancouver Whitecaps side could be so dangerous down the stretch for this season, but also going into next season. And dare I say it early, this could be a three-peat for CAN champ.
I think they'd have to be the favorites heading into it. Regardless, like, unless the roster gets completely sold a la CF Montreal at the end of last year, I don't know how you look at the Canadian Championship and not put them as favorites. And I think that's the dynamic. I don't want to speak for Whitecaps supporters, but I think as a supporter of a club, what has to excite you is the fact you do have Gold, you do have Brian White, who have been a part of this project, and they're excelling. And then you get all of this exciting news on top of it with the Canadian internationals coming in, and the possibilities just seem limitless for this group right now, and that's thoroughly thoroughly exciting. You did mention the playoffs, fourth in the West right now, and that's the next hurdle for the club. Is it's great to be exciting and play good football and try and get some of that energy back, but they've only ever won one playoff game in club history. So for you, we don't know where they're going to finish because the West is insanely tight right now.
Yes.
But what would you say, with the way things are trending, reasonable expectations for the Whitecaps this year?
So when they started the season, Andy Petrillo and I were just going through teams and what they need to succeed and what they should call a successful season. So for Canadian Premier League, we said Calgary need to get silverware this season. It looks like they're about to do that. We also said the same about Vancouver Whitecaps. They need to get silverware. So they already did that. CAN champs, they're the best team in Canada. They showed it. They showed their quality. But go on a run. Also, for me, it's getting that fan base. Mm. Like, I'm new to the game. When I'm looking at Vancouver Whitecaps, I was just like, that was a West Coast team, right? I was more focused on my football. Now that I've retired and I'm looking, I'm like, I don't know why this fan base isn't great. I'm like, the West Coast, it just seems like a vibe. It seems like a place where, like, people would want to come out and show out for the team. But if you make a run and you make a push and you have players on your team that you can back, yeah, those thousands in the stadium need to increase. And I think that's what they need to kind of push them forward. So I see them just going on a run, whether that be second round, whether that be whatever it is, it's winning more.
Yeah.
It's winning more than they have and showing that they're at a new milestone.
I think that's a really good point about increasing capacity. The thing that I always come back to with them, and we do need to move on, they do have a really good fan base. There's a love for that, for football in that market. The team has let them down a lot recently. Again, on and off the field, and we don't need to rehash that right now. But this is there have been a lot of apprehensive supporters in Vancouver going, I want to come back. I want to reinvest my time, my money, all of it into this team. And the way they're just ticking off the boxes and trending in the right direction, I think it's very exciting for Vancouver.
I gotta agree with you.
Speaking of exciting, Jonathan Sirois, you've tried to score against him in the Canadian Premier League.
Never did.
Not many did, to be fair. I think he has a few CPL single season records, but also he has a Major League Soccer record now for CF Montreal with 11 clean sheets on the season. Just wanted to give that note out. Shout out to Jonathan Sirois. And then a word on DeAndre Kerr to end, make sure we touch on all teams, because he, through all of the madness that has been this season, has been on an unbelievable run, and now he is tied for the team leading goals. What do you make of that?
The craziest part about that for 2021 preseason match, York United, my former club, played TFC2. He was playing in that game, standout player. I was just in terms of pace, strength. I was like, yeah, he's all right. Like, he can do bits. He has 5 goals. Federico Bernardeschi also has 5. He's just a route one clinical striker. Like, he looks calm in front of goal. And, like, he slots it in with his left foot against Takaoka. But we have to talk about that pass, though, from Insigne. That has to be, for me, one of the top moments from him this season. I mean, I also said that he needs to have double digit in goals, but we know that he's underachieved this season. I'm not going to just keep harping on that. That is just a fact. But the bright moment would be DeAndre Kerr, in terms of the way that he knows a pass could happen or could be in a spot and just trust Insigne to do that. Obviously, Insigne it's a peach of a pass, and only certain people can do that first time, almost like a half volley, plays it, wet grass. There's all these things you got to take into. If he hits it too hard, Takaoka is kicking that in the bleachers. Play it too soft, Berhalter's saying thank you very much and doing a counterattack. So to play that perfectly in space, but DeAndre Kerr stepped up and show those moments and just been scoring goals. And it's 5 goals in 1,000 minutes.
1,000 minutes.
That's the big thing, too. It's not just 5 goals for a season. You're like, oh, this guy's been playing. It's just a young guy who's been asked to sometimes start, sometimes come off the bench, and has brought product. So that's a huge silver lining. You were thinking at the start of the season for TFC that there are names like Michael Bradley, Bernardeschi, and Insigne that you'd be talking about. But DeAndre Kerr, for me, has to be the bright spot.
Yeah, you got to celebrate those wins in a season where there haven't been a lot of them. So great to see DeAndre Kerr develop. Great for Canadian soccer. Great for TFC. All of these things. What might not be great? This is how I'm going to pivot. I spoke to Amy Walsh earlier, the legend that was around for Footy Prime, which was taping on the same day that we did. And I asked her, so what's your optimism level for the Jamaica game coming up, the two-legged tie to get in the Olympics? And I think anyone who spent any amount of time with Amy knows that she is a very optimistic person.
She said she looks at the glass half full.
She's a glass half full type of person. And I'm trying to get her to sway because I'm still on the fence. I really don't know how I should feel going into this game or these games. And I think right now the glass is exactly half full. I don't know if I can go more than that. How are you feeling now that we're so close to leg one in Kingston?
I'm nervous. And I've stated that a few times, but I guess after just seeing Amy Walsh as well and how bright and bubbly and optimistic she was,
yes,
I said, maybe I'm looking at this wrong. Maybe I need to go back to being optimistic and seeing this Canadian side. But look, I could also say this. This is the boxing metaphor I have. Canada women's national team got knocked out, got punched in the face this past World Cup, which was a month and a half, 2 months ago. Right? Sometimes that's the best thing for an athlete, is just getting knocked out, is just getting punched in the gut, whatever it might be, that feeling of like, ouch, that was not good. You get humbled. So that is the time to go back to the drawing board, see how much you want it, and put your best foot forward. I'm hoping for the players that that is what this time is. Two games against Jamaica, who have proven that they're no-nonsense, specifically with defending. Yeah, they don't score a lot of goals, but no-nonsense defending. You got to go all the way to Independence Park in Kingston. Again, I wish I knew one of the players, because I asked for a certain type of fruit to bring back, or some sugar cane, all that good stuff. We could have shared, buddy. But anyways.
You would not have got a sniff of it.
I probably would have ate that as soon as I got it. You're right. I digress. But it is a huge match. Two-legged affair. BMO Field is sold out. But they got to bring it. This is the time. So I'm a bit nervous, bit uneasy, but my boxing metaphor just shows that you got to be, when you're humbled like that, you got to bounce back. And it goes one of two ways. Either you're still carrying that loss of the World Cup over your shoulders, or you said, you know what, we're renewed, we're refreshed, let's get into it. And I hope it's the latter. I hope it's the second one.
And the coaches get paid a lot of money to be motivators, to be tacticians, to come up with winning game plans. That is the biggest test for Bev Priestman's staff right now, is because they got knocked out, and we heard Jesse Fleming in tears apologizing to a nation because they care. No one has ever doubted that this team, whether or not they care, they do. They obviously wear the crest with pride. My worry is that the pressure is entirely on them as the Olympic champions, as the team that's expected to win. Jamaica has an opportunity, but if they don't get it, it's, well, we're still on the right path. We're disappointed, obviously, because they think, I would imagine they believe that they're good enough to be in the Olympics, but this is the team with the gold medals around their neck. So it's that balance. If they can use that as motivation, it's an expectation, we're going to do it, versus, oh my goodness, what if we don't? Because yes, the World Cup was so poor. So that's sort of where my head's at. But because I want to end the show or end the conversation on a high, what motivates you to believe that this team can do it? What excites you about this opportunity for them?
You know, I think when you look at football, a lot of times, even when I played as a player, you always break things down. Oh, well, the defense, you guys let in goals so easily. Your midfield's open. And then sometimes when you get that solidified, you're like, man, we can't score a goal. This is the only guy that could score. I think Canada's problem is pretty evident, right? Mm. Which is scoring goals.
Against a team that's really good at defense.
Yes. And so they struggle with that. But I think the silver lining with that is that they have a lot of attacking options.
Yes, they do.
It's not like you have one player that you're like, hey, this is the only player that can maybe give us goals or bring us productivity going forward. There's actually, I would say, eight that I would put in there and say, you know what, they could be on the day, bring a little bright light, bring a little spark. I think it's just about getting that connection and that chemistry right. So for me, I think the biggest thing is there are the players. It's just finding out how to use them and how to get them going. And sometimes that's a coach's issue of balancing the team right. But that's also on the players. Like, you could talk about systems and tactics and all these things, but Christine Sinclair is on her way out, and she's scored an abundant amount of goals for this country. She is a prolific striker, and she will be looked at in that regard for many years to come. But be the next shark in front of goal. Be the next person that that Bev Priestman can count on, that Canadians can cheer about and be like, you know what, start this person every time. Like, I think sometimes in football, we get so caught up in how people are going to play and what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, it's going about your business the right way. If you're a defender, defend. If you're a midfielder, make sure you're connecting. If you're a striker, a winger, whatever it is, a center attacking midfielder, make sure that people can remember you for your productivity going forward. And I hope that's the case going to these two legs.
Okay, I know you could give me a fully fledged explanation here, but we don't have the time for it. So I'm just going to ask you simply, what is a good result for them?
That's a great question. I think I got to go back to my university coach, Steve Herdsman, Columbus Crew, Colorado Rapids, phenomenal athlete. He would always say, even or ahead. Mm-hmm. Even or ahead. He's like, man, if we can't win today, grab that draw. It sounds pretty easy. But it's difficult to do, to keep that. It's like, hey, if we're not going to get it today, let's lock down. But if we're going to push for it, try to get that goal. I think if Canada come back to BMO Field, even or ahead, it's in the bag and they'll take care of it. Because that crowd will also help them push into another direction.
I will only add an asterisk on that in if they are ahead by only one goal, I'm nervous.
Oh.
if they go in and get a 1-0,
yeah,
I'm nervous. Because away goals matter here.
True.
So you got to remember that. They come back to BMO Field if it's 1-0 for Canada. If Jamaica scores once, penalties, extra time, all of that is on the cards. And then you start wondering about pressure, what BMO is going to do and react to that. That's why, to me, leg one is almost more important to set the stage for, as you mentioned, a sold-out BMO Field, which will be incredibly exciting. Speaking of exciting, Andy Petrillo should be back to digest this all for you.
We might need to have a third chair because, buddy, I love it with you.
Reminder that this is a podcast. Leave a 5-star review if you liked it. Just for that guy's smile. 5 stars for Jordan Wilson.